Did he marvel at your magnificent fingering? Did the way you stroke your bow leave him breathless? It was one stupid mistake! Look how many times you forgave Brian! I never forgave Brian! I never had to.
Still Queer as Folk.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast, where each week we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 15 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Please click that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you like our show, five-star ratings sure do help us out a lot.
Continue the discussion with us on all the social media platforms at StillQueerAF, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
This episode is called Stop Hurting Us. It's episode 7 of season 3. This is the halfway marker of season 3, Matt.
How many episodes are we in now? 50-something?
I don't know.
I mean, there were 22 in the first season, and then I believe 16 or 17 in the second. Now we're 7.
I think there's 20 in the second season.
20, yeah. So yeah, we're hitting that. I think we're over 50 now, which is kind of amazing.
Let's see. There were 21 episodes in season 2, 22 episodes in season 1, and this is our 7th episode, season 3.
So this is exactly 50.
Ta-da!
Our 50th episode. It first aired in the U.S. on April 20th, 2003.
Stop Hurting Us was directed by Kevin Inch. He directed 8 episodes, and this is his 4th. We last saw him in season 2 when he directed the worst ever episode of Queer as Folk, and it was called The Wedding.
Yeah, I'm going to drink to that.
That episode was so bad that we continually reference it anytime there's something about the show that we don't like.
At least it's not as bad as The Wedding.
That's true.
Ron Cohen and Daniel Lipman, executive producers, wrote the story, and Michael McLennan wrote the teleplay, and this is his 7th out of 13. His first was the Pride episode in season 1.
I love that episode. Remember, I was not at all looking forward to it, and then when we reviewed it, I was like, oh, this is so good.
It changed your
this
mind.
This is great. Here's what happened in Stop Hurting Us from Queer as Folk, the book.
Ted goes to court as Stockwell enjoys a bump in his polls.
Following a plea from Emmett, Brian convinces the mayoral candidate to let Ted go.
Michael shocks Ben into quitting steroids by threatening to infect himself.
Oh boy.
Yes, we'll get into that.
When Ethan's cute fan from Harrisburg shows up, Justin realizes that the romantic promises were just lies and leaves him.
First time proves to be the charm when Melanie gets pregnant with Michael's sperm.
And Uncle Vic gets a boyfriend.
Yes!
Yay! There was an awful lot of gay drama in this episode.
Quite a bit packed, yes.
I had kind of a hard time breaking down the scene structure.
I feel like in this episode is where we got a very clear flow in and out of each storyline. And I haven't really seen that as of late.
Oh, I thought they were kind of muddled together a little bit more than usual.
Oh, you saw it muddled. I saw that they kind of flowed and weaved into one another.
So let's talk about Justin and Ethan first. Well, what was this building that Ethan and Justin came out of at the beginning? They came down like a fire escape or something. What was that?
Is that maybe that's is that not the lives? Bohemian apartment just from a different entrance?
Yeah, maybe that's it. I just had like no bearing when this started because then they got coffee at someplace other than the diner.
They're just like screwing with all of our locations in this episode. We don't know which way is up because, you know, yeah, they usually just enter through the door at the apartment.
Right. I did like how it threw me off balance at first because we see Ethan quickly going to the dark side. He outright lies to Justin.
You drove all the way to Harrisburg? Why don't you tell me?
I thought you'd be pissed. Besides, your agent was all over you. So I just watched.
What did you see?
You talking to your worshipful admirers.
Well, you should have rescued me.
Hey, you didn't seem to mind. Especially that cute guy.
What cute guy?
The one you left with.
Oh, him. He was a music student. He wanted to pick my brains, that's all.
That's all?
Yeah, we talked about grad schools. I don't even think he was gay.
From where I was standing, it looked like he knew how to blow more than a trumpet.
Sounds like you're jealous.
I'm not jealous.
Then why would you even think I was interested?
I love this. He said, oh, it's just a student, you know.
Yeah, he's a music student.
And well, and I have, and Ethan has a point about this, even though Justin turns out to be right. people are going to want to talk slash flirt with him. And that's the whole image that they're trying to cultivate with Ethan and why Justin can't be around.
Ah, but we knew better. So
yes, we did.
Everything that he was saying just rang so hollow. Ethan just comes right out and calls Justin jealous. And even if he was just joking about it, he was just lying the whole time. And this was the first time that I had seen Ethan doing something that really, really put me off before he was walking on water. I love that character.
You know, I still like him. And I think this is a problem that I have with how they treat the wrap up to his story.
Well, yeah. And here he's saying all the right things to Justin, but the only thing that was missing was, let's also have an open relationship.
Right? Like, of course I didn't cheat on you. But if I did, is it really that big of a deal?
It's like the OJ thing. Like
if book, I had done if it. I,
yeah.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And if I had cheated on you with the music student.
He's trying to hide in plain sight.
Speaking of hiding in plain sight, Daphne's back again.
Which I love Daphne. And I love Daphne in this situation. So we're at this market.
Planning a party?
For two. Celebrate Ethan's triumphant return.
Hail Caesar.
And supplicate myself at his feet for thinking he was fucking around on me. I guess that's what comes from living with Brian.
Okay, correction. Brian didn't fuck around on you, you know? He was always honest right from the start.
Daphne comes in again with the Brian defense. And I think she's very level-headed and very logical about it.
She's definitely on Team Brian.
And when she's that voice of reason for Justin and saying, like, you can't really hate on Brian because he was 100% with you. He was so honest about who he was.
Well, leading into that is something that I had a big problem with, which is Justin actually believes Ethan and he's defending Ethan to Daphne, even though he saw it with his own eyes in Harrisburg. They left together. We knew what was happening. Justin, honey. Don't believe the hype.
Don't be gullible about it.
Yeah.
Well, and this was my thing about in the previous episode is that I couldn't tell if they were just trying to film it in a way that was trying to make it look like Ethan was cheating, but in fact he wasn't, or he just was.
It seemed pretty unambiguous to me.
Right. Well, that's the thing, because we were seeing it from Justin's perspective. We were seeing what he was interpreting and saying he's gotten this close to him. And then the music student disappears and then Ethan quickly follows. And we don't see the culmination of what that interaction was because we're all seeing it through Justin's eyes.
I think this scene might have worked better if it had played out the way that you had suggested a couple episodes ago, where it was all in Justin's head. It was like a dream scene mm-hmm. that he was in Harrisburg, where we're left not knowing, was he there? I don't know.
Was it a dream?
Yeah, it could have played out the drama so much better there.
Absolutely. I mean, we're only halfway through this season. We're going to wrap up Ethan's storyline like this. I mean, I've gotten rather invested in knowing that Brian and Justin are over, and here is this person who is the complete opposite, yet we're just going to make sure that by the end of this episode, they are done.
There was one thing I liked about this scene and one thing that I didn't like about the scene. Which one do you want to hear first?
What did you like?
I like Justin's line about the cheese.
Smells like some guys I've gone down on.
That is the grossest, most disgusting thing I've ever heard. Ew.
Thanks.
Oh, I loved everything about this market scene. I really did. What did you not like?
I didn't quite get the jump cuts in the supermarket between Justin and Daphne and an unrelated story about Michael and Vic. I just didn't know why they were both in the market, why these scenes were jumping back and forth, because they had nothing to do with each other. It was almost as if Kevin Inch had two supermarket scenes on the script and he just shot them together and said, let's weave these in.
So I laughed a lot during this scene.
Were the two scenes complimentary or the two
I thought they were a hoot because I didn't think that they were going for the overblown comedy that we've seen. Perfect example being like the line of dicks that Ted had, you know, yeah. where it's like, okay, the comedy is just so broad that I'm not buying it. Here I thought it was just fun, clever wordplay that was done with the clever editing. To jump back and forth between Vic talking to Michael about his situation to Daphne talking to Justin about his. And I like that it ends with Daphne going, "You're a cheese ball."
That didn't look anything like a cheese ball. What was that thing?
It was a hunk of something.
It looked like a condom full of like water or something. Oh, oh boy. I just started to hate Ethan when he was just lying to Justin.
Of course, I love the rest of you too. But when I was in that hotel room the other night, alone, jerking off.
You're touching yourself? You didn't call me?
I was imagining you kissing me all over.
Ugh. Yes.
It's like, stop it.
Just imagining you kissing me all over. And then Justin's about to go down on him, and then there's a knock at the door.
Oh, who the fuck is that? The Girl Scouts?
Nah. Tell them to fuck up. Hi, is Ethan here?
What are you doing here?
I wanted to see you again, so I drove in.
Well, you shouldn't have. I think you better go now.
No, wait. He came all the way from Harrisburg. It's a long drive. Believe me, I know.
Oh, yeah? You his roommate, or?
I'm his muse.
How did that boy know where he lived? Did he give him his address and say, write me sometime?
It's such a good question. I mean, like, I don't think he had George Sickle level resources to try and find Ethan.
Yeah.
I mean, did he call Ethan's agent? And his agent would never give that away to a guy. If it was a woman, sure. But it makes
that's
no
right.
Godly sense. I mean,
it was a great moment, but there was no earthly reason how that guy would have been there.
Yes. And so it just wraps up the fact that, yes, Ethan did cheat.
Yes.
And I feel like it's such an easy cop-out to end the Ethan storyline.
Well, yeah. And a lot of this were sort of like those Brett Kavanaugh lies, those catchable lies,
yes,
where you say something that's such an absurd lie, even though Ethan knows that Justin was there, it's catchable. You're going to get caught, Ethan.
Exactly. And the fact that Ethan,
stop
like,
lying.
Well, and Ethan like tries to keep the lie going. Like, why did you come here?
Yeah. What are you doing here?
Yes,
he was thinking fast. I'll give him that.
Yeah. He was trying to get out of it. But I love what Justin says. He's like, it's a long drive from Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
It's a long way to go to bottom for a violin player.
Yes. Well, and
should have had a threesome.
I thought that was
come
like,
on in.
That could have been a way to build the drama and say like Justin would have been so into it. Only for it to like explode in Ethan's face and not in a good way.
Ethan had sent the guy away. He's like, well, you shouldn't have come here. You should go. And then there was a cut. And then we came back a little bit later and Justin's just tearing him up. But I have to say, props to Ethan for finally coming clean on it. He was caught, but he did like a full mea culpa on this. So
yes,
he gets a little bit of credit there.
He said, I missed you so much and I was trying to cover my ass. And, you know, yeah, he was being incredibly honest. I have to also give props to Justin for the amount of metaphor he used.
Yeah.
To stroke your bow. I was just like, wow, you were coming up with these on the spot. And these are amazing.
Tore him down.
Yes. And I think what really stuck in my mind was what transpired between Ethan and Justin at the end of this this moment.
Did he marvel at your magnificent fingering? Did the way you stroke your bow leave him breathless?
It was one stupid mistake. Look how many times you forgave Brian. I never forgave Brian. I never had to. Because he never promised me anything. You did.
Yeah, I actually
you
bumped
did.
On this one. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because more to the point, Brian never lied to Justin. So it's not just this Brian didn't promise him anything. He never lied to Justin. He was always upfront about who he was, what he was,
yep,
and he was honest about what he was up to. And I think that was a bit of a miss from McLennan here because it's just as important as not promising him anything. It's like if you're going to weigh the two, it's like,
oh,
do you put the promise or telling the truth on the higher level?
I think for where Justin was in his development, in a way, I think for him, promises rang truer to him. It's an odd thing, but we have to, again, remember, he's still 19 years old.
That's true.
He's still a teenager who's sort of idealistic and optimistic about what it means to be in love. And remember, he works so hard in definites,
mm-hmm,
and he's so sure of himself that if someone says this, that he is going to take them at their word. If they don't, then he knows he's been betrayed.
For me, it's like the promise and then a lie, like breaking the promise and then lying. That's like a 1-2 punch.
Absolutely.
In like gay relationships. That's a knockdown blow when you get those two together. Mm-hmm. If you have like one of them individually, sometimes you can skate around it and get out of it.
It's
you put those two together. It's like,
but oof, when knocked out.
And then Justin's pieces out of the Bohemian apartment with no running water. And this is the last time we see Ethan Gould, fiddler extraordinaire.
Which is a shame. I feel like it's sad that this is how we're just going to leave things with him.
Yeah, Fab Filippo played Ethan for 10 episodes, and he's been working steadily in TV ever since. He's straight, also, I found out. I didn't know that until I was researching this episode.
Did you ever find out if he actually played the violin?
I didn't.
That is the remaining question I have.
We can keep talking about Ethan for the rest of this podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah. Let's.
So, goodbye, Ethan. Goodbye, Fab. We're going to miss you.
Very much.
So Babylon is back, and look, there's Justin doing some topping.
Yes, while Brian is watching.
So Justin has this a moment with Ethan, stomps out, heads right to Babylon, finds the nearest guy, and starts pounding him. That's how he gets over this?
Well, we do have a moment where Brian sees Justin at the diner because he stayed with Daphne at least a couple of days. I don't think it's within 24 hours because Brian comments on like, well, that's the same ensemble you were wearing yesterday.
Oh, right. Okay. So that was the next night.
Yes. I think there's been even then it's still like less than 48 hours.
Yeah. He got over Ethan really quickly.
Yes. But he is topping this.
I think what this means is that Justin had been bottoming for months with Ethan and he just had to go top somebody.
Sure. Absolutely. That's some aggression he needs to take out.
The other thing I liked about this Babylon scene where Justin is topping in the back room or these looks between Justin and Brian. Those are like super hot and sexy looks.
Yes. Well, and I also liked, it's such a small detail, but so while Justin is topping this guy, Brian is getting blown and Justin's arm is reached out on the wall just enough so that the guy blowing Brian is not like that action is not visible.
Oh,
and I thought that was very a clever way to censor the sex in that moment.
I think Justin got the better end of this backroom adventure. I mean, he was fucking. Brian was just getting blown.
He did get an end, yeah.
Don't you think this scene might have been better, though, if Brian was topping somebody and caught sight of Justin bottoming? Because that's their relationship, for the most part. We've only seen Justin bottom once, top once. I think it would have played really well that way.
Oh, but I like what you said about, like, he had been bottoming for Ethan, so he needed to top. I think we all, well, I don't know about you, Patrick, but I certainly go through some of those moments where I'm like, I don't need to do X, I need to do Y.
I'm a hungry bottom.
Oh.
I was doing your voice, sir.
Oh, that was my voice. Yes. Okay.
Still queer as folk.
Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We like those 5 stars.
Still queer as folk. There's more on the way. I had the B story as Ted, Brian, and Stockwell. Mm-hmm. This was kind of an unusual pairing for us anyway. Normally, our pairings tend to go the way of the relationships, and those seem to track with the A story, the B story, and the C story, or what we call runners. So here we find that in Melanie's ever-growing CV, she can now add defense litigator to her law career.
Yes, at this point, she practices
all law.
Law. She is all access law.
Why did Ted look so disheveled there?
Because I would assume he had spent some time in like holding.
Yeah, but it looked like he was on like an all-night bender. His hair is all like wild. He had like a full like growth of beard.
He probably slept on a bench for the past 24 hours.
Do you think he was in jail that long?
Absolutely.
What for? He has to be bailed out quickly.
Well, as we discover in the episode, it's clear that Ted is being made an example of.
Oh, you think they...
Yeah, I think...
There's a little more of the story than
absolutely,
we
saw. Yeah.
I disliked that slow motion look that Ted gave Emmett in court. Also, more importantly, dislike that Emmett gave this really sullen look back to Ted. I wish that it wasn't in slow motion. And I wish that Emmett would have been like his usual perky self, not the, you're really fucked now, Ted.
That's what look. You saw it as? I guess yeah. I saw worry. I saw uncertainty. In that moment, you don't know how it's going to go because you have this prosecutor who is dragging Ted's business, which, by the way, other than the fact that he had an underage assistant, was a legitimate business, which I love that Melanie points out. But they are using the fact that it's a gay porn site against Ted. You know, they use that phrase, unsavory business.
That's enough for Emmett to not be highly supportive of his partner. I would think that I was Ted there.
I don't think he's not being unsupportive. I think he's terrified for his partner. I thought that's what he was conveying. Not of like, oh, you're fucked. It's more I'm concerned for you.
If I was Ted in that situation, I turned around to see my partner. I wouldn't want to see somebody that is portraying like,
Bad. I don't think it was that. I don't know how this is going to turn out for you.
I want to see somebody I think pump their fist and say, you got this. And like, bring me up, not make me look at my partner and go, well, if he's down, I'm going to be down too. This is going bad.
I guess I just didn't read it that way. I didn't see him as being down or, dismissive like or
compassionate is what you saw.
Yes. That's what I thought it was. I thought he was being maybe sympathetic is a way to put it. I just didn't read it as.
Yeah. I would want to see like, hey, Patrick, get off the mat, take your gloves off, go bare knuckle on this.
Oh, okay.
So in the future, if for some reason you ever are in the gallery in court and I turn around and there you are, fist pump.
Great.
You just looked at me like I was crazy.
Yes.
So Stockwell, his aides, and Brian are all walking down Liberty Avenue.
Just look at this street. Back rooms, bathhouses.
It's a veritable breeding ground for every form of sexually transmitted disease.
But with your help, we're going to clean it up.
And in the process, win the election.
I have two questions here.
Sure.
How is it that nobody recognized Brian on his home turf until after the heteros left?
I am shocked no one exposed him right then and there.
Yeah. They're on Liberty Avenue. People know him.
He's everybody the Brian knows Kenny. Him.
Right. The second thing was...
but conveniently, he is not exposed in that moment.
How can anyone not have some kind of gaydar about Brian? I mean, look at him.
Seriously.
To say nothing of that racquetball outfit that he put on.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that racquetball.
How can anybody think that he is straight? Even straight people would look at him and go, he's gay.
That racquetball scene was ripe with sexual tension. I thought he and Stockwell were going to get it on.
I liked it.
I was a fan. But before we get...
No, wait. Wouldn't that have been such a great story arc?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was something I was totally expecting. But in the same token, we have two sides of pleading with Brian. One, clearly from Ted, who has been advised that you need to talk to Brian because he's literally in the pockets of Stockwell. Who knows what he could possibly say to help you? And that exchange that they have in front of Brian's car, that is where I was just like, Brian is still trying to keep it all business. And I'm like, Brian is really going to be okay seeing who I assumed was his friend get a possible maximum sentence in jail because Brian clearly has some sort of influence on Stockwell.
Well, there's a couple things about this scene that I didn't quite get here, which is why is Ted in disguise?
Well, because his face was all over like the tabloids.
Well, so
like
what? The porn He's king. In the gayborhood. Who's going to care?
Well, especially, I'm pretty sure they would have thought, well, he's guilty until proven innocent.
I don't think gay people like in the gayborhood there would really give a shit.
Well, we also know Ted to be unbelievably neurotic. So he went overboard with the disguising himself.
And then like you, I didn't like how offhand Brian was.
No.
To
him.
Look. Your friend Stockwell, he wants the powers that be to throw the book at me. You think maybe you could put in a word?
Which word would you like?
Don't.
Sorry, Theodore, no can do.
Please, I'm begging you. Look, I do his television spots. I'm not the fucking DA.
I know, but you've got his ear. He might listen to you.
Well, you know as well as I do, that would be overstepping the bounds.
Since when did you ever give a shit about overstepping the bounds? You were always the first to cross them.
It's business.
It just seemed too fake and kind of manufactured, but we're starting to see Conan Lippman turn the Brian character into this mythical, all-powerful A-gay, which he becomes in season 4 and 5.
Or that's how they want to portray him.
Super gay.
As the super A-gay.
I also saw a big gap in this story, though. As anyone who has ever watched Law & Order will know, the police don't decide which cases to pursue in court, and Stockwell's the police chief. So I thought that was a gap, and he investigates the crime, the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders.
These are their stories.
Exactly, but I don't know, this arc is based on the police chief going after Ted and Brian having the power to influence him into dropping the case, but...
it was very muddled, and somehow saying that the DA and the police chief were in cahoots, so they're abusing their positions of power to go after this one person.
Yeah, because Stockwell's line was he asked the DA to fast track the case before the election, but he has no real power to do that. Like you said, unless they're in cahoots or collusion.
I do want to take a moment to talk about Emmett
and Mrs. Ted Schmidt.
His wardrobe in that scene. I have to give major props to the credited costume designer for the series, Patrick Antosh, for Emmett's look in that scene. I mean, I was just obsessed with his wardrobe, with the beautiful coat and scarf that was draped over his shoulder, giving me full autumn realness with it. It was just impeccable design and dressing in that moment. So again, shout out to Patrick Antosh, the costume designer for this series. And something that I really love when looking up at Patrick's credits that I think helps explain that impeccable taste is that he was the on-set wardrobe supervisor for the 2000 film American Psycho. Have you ever seen that, Patrick?
I have not.
Highly recommend. It is based off of the Bret Easton Ellis novel. It stars Christian Bale as this total yuppie, all we know is that he's a VP of mergers and acquisitions, and he commits incredibly grisly murders. And one of the most impeccable things, probably I would say one of the most iconic looks that Patrick Bateman has in the movie is this clear raincoat from Burberry that he wears before committing a heinous and grisly murder.
That's something that we'd see Emmett wearing.
Absolutely.
A clear raincoat.
Yes, exactly. So again, huge shout out to Patrick Antosh. Excellent work on Emmett.
You realize, of course, there's a very good chance he'll go to jail.
Well, tell him to look on the bright side. At least he'll get fucked regularly.
I suppose that's meant to be witty. We all know about your charming sense of humor. But we also know that deep down, you care about us, even though you'd never admit it, which is why
I already told Ted there's nothing.
I know what you told him.
Brian is such a dick, though.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
And Brian is just going well beyond mischief here. It's become sinister.
Yes.
I think it's just kind of crossing over this weird line of how everybody mostly had empathy for the Brian character, but now he's doing like some really crazy shit. And it tracks a little bit with the UK version where Stuart Alan Jones turned into a criminal and torched cars and stuff like that.
And I'm like, what is the end game to this?
Yeah.
I mean, and we know this as we've gone through the series that I've never been a huge Brian fan. Every once in a while he turns me and I think like, okay, I see a glimmer of hope in you. But especially with how he was treating Ted, who I know he's very snippy, snide with Ted. And calling him a schlub and, you know, a nobody.
A bug. He called him a bug in this episode.
But I thought he still, in his way, cared for him. Here, I don't even see that.
Yeah, exactly. There's no hint of it. Like, we needed to see some conflict between Brian the businessman and Brian the gay BFF.
Yeah, and like I think we get a lot of nonverbals. We get a lot of looks, especially when he's with Stockwell. But nothing that is definitive for me to grab onto, like, oh, now I see him having in conflict in terms of saying that this is just business. Clearly, he can see that this is going to affect everybody that he may care about.
There was a really nice piece of storytelling with Brian and Emmett. Brian had heard enough. He opens the door to the office with the silent, get the fuck out implication. It's like the I said good day, sir moment. But Emmett just powerfully just strides right over and closes the door. I love that. He's just out of fucks at that point.
Yes.
And he's just gonna lay it all on the line for Ted. And this it was just one hell of a scene played by Peter Page.
Yes. I have it was beautiful. No notes.
Yeah. When we see Emmett have a really super serious, deeply emotional story, that's where Peter Page really, really delivers on Emmett. It's such an exact opposite of the flamboyant Emmett.
This is where I see what you were talking about earlier, what you would have liked to have seen in the courtroom scene. I see that determination. He's going to stand by his man. He is going to do what it takes to make sure that Brian needs to see that he has the influence, that he can do this, that he has to do this for Ted, because that's what matters to Emmett.
He went up against the all-powerful Brian and he won. We find out that Ted's going to not go to jail, but he's going to pay a penalty. Here we see Melanie once again as a terrible lawyer. She did nothing at all in this case. She just showed up in her pantsuit and bailed him out. That's it.
She might as well have just gone into the courtroom going, la, 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 la.
Hey, don't rejoice yet. They're going to slap you with a motherfucker of a fine. You're also going to have to shut down the website.
Forever.
You do anything even remotely connected to porn again, even buying a fucking naked greeting card, the DL slam you to the wall and screw you standing. Now put your pants on.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of curious how that penalty can come into play. It's like, can you really force somebody to close their business?
It doesn't make sense unless it's part of the deal. Because also, they don't say anything about him having to go on like a sex offender registry or anything like that. But he has to plead guilty to these charges.
Yeah, the charges were contributing to a delinquency of a minor or something like that. So close your business, pay a fine, see ya.
And get on with
your
life.
Never comes back up again.
And I do love it when they go to the basement because he's closing up shop.
Oh, it was so sad watching Emmett and Ted dismantle the whack shack.
It was really sad. And I love that they Emmett rediscovers his turning bed that he had negotiated.
Mm-hmm. Look, it's my revolving bed from when I was a big star.
You still are. It's the dicks that got small.
I love how he says that it was back when he was a big star, and Ted says, "Oh, you are a big star. It's the dicks that got small," harkening back to the classic line from Sunset Boulevard and Norma Desmond.
You're Norma Desmond. Used to be in silent pictures. Used to be big.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
And I thought this was also just a really beautiful, tender moment between Emmett and Ted. Where
it was so cute. Really, and then super touching.
Yes. And I it's one of the first times I really grasped onto what they mean to each other. I understood their bond. I understood their relationship. And it was really nice. And oh God, when Ted said that the thing he's upset about most is they had to give up the house and how he wanted Emmett to have that. Oh, that one kind of got me.
I loved this notion that Ted doesn't know what's next. Emmett's just rolling with it because his life isn't changing much. Ted's life is like completely turned upside down. He has no idea what's coming next. So I really like the way that those two actors played out that scene. There was something else that we quickly glossed over is when Ted did his awkward thank you to Brian in the diner.
Yes.
Brian ends up saying that he only did it to protect his client, and Debbie sees through him, though.
I'll never figure out why he does that.
You mean act like a total shit?
When it's obvious he just saved Teddy's ass.
This was a really nicely played scene. It was really short. It was really sweet.
It all just came from glances at just the right time. That's how you know it's a well-edited and a well-directed scene.
So that's the end of the Whack Shack. No more porn.
No.
And thus begins a much more interesting arc for Theodore Schmidt.
And I always wanted to know what happened to his assistant.
Eddie. He went back to homeroom.
Still queer as folk.
So there were three runners in this episode. I'm going to talk about the easiest one first. Mm-hmm. So Melanie gets pregnant.
Yep.
Now we'll talk about the second one.
First time out of the box. Told you. Don't fuck with Mother Nature, huh? Well, I'm here to tell her
don't fuck with me.
That's literally the treatment that McLennan gave Melanie here.
You did it.
Thank you. You're next. Okay, so let's talk about some better runners here. Michael and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
This scene where they're fucking and the condom broke.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Who did you come?
No, thank God. Oh, the condom broke.
Well, no. No, don't. Keep going.
What?
I said keep going. I don't care.
Michael, you could get...
I don't care. Fuck me.
Oh, God. Michael. Oh, Michael. Michael.
When I was watching this, I was thinking like, wow, this is a really hot scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, wait, the condom broke. It's like, keep going. No, keep going. And I'm like, what the fuck? But then I realized, wait a minute, this is a dream.
It's a dream.
Totally.
Okay.
But it caught me. It got me. I was like,
in this moment, it got me too. Cause I was like, cause I didn't know if when the scene dissolved and he's like sitting there thinking, is he thinking about, I just let him do that? What does that mean?
I think it was more of a daydream because Ben had said, maybe it would be easier if I was with mm-hmm. a positive guy. So I think he had that in the forefront of his head.
Okay.
And so he is starting to play through what this was going to,
sure.
how this was going to play out. So that was some good writing. Juice Pig, though, was not some good writing.
Ooh, very on the nose.
And I'm like, oh, this comic book metaphor is back. It's like,
And like so obvious. Like you couldn't even tell that Michael was trying to mask it a little bit.
Well, go figure. It's Ben. Ta-da.
He's a juice pig. He's still good deep down inside.
And of course, Ben has to come in and be, oh,
Well, and this is a conversation that then comes up is that it's hard for Michael to understand because it's not his world, as Ben puts it.
Yeah.
Because he is negative and Ben is positive. It is something that Michael could never understand. He could never be in Ben's shoes.
And that's something that I bumped up on too, because something I didn't like about the Paul story and that memorial that Ben was going to have to go to was that he said a couple times that it was going to be hard for him to see all those guys with their sunken cheeks.
Mm-hmm.
It was as if Paul and his other friends only had positive friends. And that wasn't even the case in 2003. So I didn't like that whole, it's not your world. You have no part in this. You don't know what we're thinking. It's like, okay, yes, it's a different human condition,
but
human
it's
experience,
also, but it's a risk that all gay men experience or have to experience. It is something that we do have to live with the reality that could happen to us.
There's something that I really didn't like about Michael's ridiculous ploy to shock Ben off of steroids.
was it him waiting in the dark?
Yep. I couldn't stand that.
I was like, this is a little dramatic.
Yeah. So this is the stop hurting us scene, which is the title of this episode. And I had a couple problems with this one.
Mm-hmm.
The first is more of a technical issue. The steroid that Ben is using is delivered with an intramuscular injection, not intravenously. There is a much lower chance of HIV transmission with that type of needle versus an IV needle.
Now, do you think that is something Michael knows?
Well, yes, because he did research, remember?
Well, I don't think he read the research. I think he said steroid use, print.
Yeah.
Into Ben. I don't think he actually read it.
And just to be clear, an intramuscular needle, you can still transmit HIV that way, but it's into the single digit percentages. So Michael had kind of a really bad method of frightening Ben, or frightening and threatening there. And then the second part was that syringe that he had looked more like a tranquilizer dart. That thing was huge.
Yes, it
and
did.
That's not the one that we had previously seen Ben using. That was the one that he had in his hand was an intravenous needle.
And that's why I thought it was just a ploy. It wasn't actually a needle that Ben had used. It was all...
Well, yeah, because my next point was on what planet would any sane person think that a plan like this is going to like scare the shit out of Ben into saying, oh, I'll stop using steroids.
But it does.
Yeah, it was terrible writing, but excellent directing.
Yes, I think that's the pieces that I bought into the tension of the scene.
Well, just like that, Ben's off steroids arc is done. Next.
Vic.
Yeah, that's almost like the, the runner number one here is Melanie got pregnant.
Check.
Runner number two, Ben is off steroids.
Check.
Number three, we get interesting though. Uncle Vic and Rodney. So we not only see Debbie P.
Yes.
But we hear it too.
Tinkle.
She sat down on that commode and we start hearing it. She even does a little like, and then the
just relaxes,
starts,
lets it flow.
But this Rodney shower scene was really terribly shot because Debbie comes in, she sits down, she's taking her whiz, and then she's just prattling on and on and on about Ted and then
when Stockwell and all that.
Yeah. When Rodney opens the shower curtain, he's shocked that somebody is there. He's like, whoop, oh, who's there? It wasn't like, oh, excuse me, I'm in the shower. Debbie gets up, whips open the curtain, and
I didn't know if maybe Rodney was trying to bide his time and hope that she doesn't say anything, like that she was just going to get in there and then leave, and then he would have been fine.
It was just awkwardly done.
Yes, but something that I did love is when Vic finally comes in.
Morning, Shish. So you've met Rodney.
And he has the goofiest smile on his face.
He's like, I got some.
And I was like, oh, I was so happy for him.
I loved how stunned Debbie looked. Then she's just like, what the actual fuck is going on here?
And I thought it was hysterical. But this time, Rodney is invited to dinner. It turns out you learn how he and Vic met. They went to a positive men's support meeting. They are both positive. And this is, again, what feeds into the Ben and Michael runner as well, is that Rodney believes that, you know, he had dated negative men before and it never worked out. There's just something about dating another positive man. They get it. And then Vic has like got to step in. It's like, but not every positive man thinks like that. And
yeah. Jack Weatherall played that scene so well with his looks alone.
I want more Vic.
Jack Weatherall is really one of the standout actors in the show. And surprisingly, the writing is generally good for him. And maybe it's just because it's not quite at high volume.
Mm-hmm.
They really focus on making Vic a meaningful character, except in season one when he was just sort of being wheeled around all the time. He's really, really come around.
It almost reminds me of, I'm going to bring up the Golden Girls again, how Sophia was meant to be a recurring character, but never a series regular. But people loved her so much from just that one episode that they cut another character to build her up and make her series regular. Here it's as if they're like, well, maybe at the end of season one, we'll kill off Vic because he's already near death. But then maybe people found a lot in common with him. They enjoyed him because Jack Weatherall is doing such a great job with it that now he just built. They're like, well, we got to beef up his role now. We can't kill him off.
At least one positive character. So,
well, and that's another thing I'm very fascinated by is like here, we're talking about positive men having sex and having a relationship and living their lives. And I think that's actually something to recognize because that was something we probably didn't see a lot in TV. Because a lot of times whenever positive characters are portrayed, a lot of it has to deal with the AIDS crisis. And so we're immediately seeing them die. We're seeing the crisis. We're seeing the epidemic. Here we're seeing like, hi, these are gay men who are living their everyday lives who happen to be positive.
Yeah, and this was 2003, so this was pre-Grindr. Mm-hmm. It was almost pre-Manhunt.
Pre-prep?
Yeah.
Yes, it's...
So if anything, the Vic character really symbolized some of the edginess about the show, which the straight community saw, but the gay community saw as a little more, okay.
We're like, yes, and?
Yeah, next. So let's recap this episode with our hits and misses. I had to think about my hit for this one.
Really? Okay.
Well, normally my hit comes pretty quickly to me. Like normally I'm picking up on it as the episode is unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode was just kind of messy. So it took me a while to really think it through. I'm going to have to say that the big hit was Justin unloading on Ethan and walking out. But I wish they just could have dragged that out a little bit longer. It was, you made me a promise. You didn't keep it. Goodbye. Series wrap for Ethan.
That's like part of his ability to speak in certainty.
Yeah.
You cheated, you lied, I'm out. But like, I would have thought there would have been a moment for Ethan to try and win him back. Because I do think deep down, Ethan does care for him, does love him. He had a moment of weakness.
They could only book FabFilippo for 10 episodes. They had to wrap it up really quickly.
We got to cut this out now. My head came very quickly for me, actually. And it's Vic having a love life.
Yay.
Because again, they know how to write for Vic. I've yet to see Vic get material that does not match what Jack Weatherall is bringing to it.
We really only know so far, though, that Vic got laid and that they had dinner.
So we've only been out a couple of times.
That's right.
Things looked promising.
More to come. My miss was Michael and his bizarre method of getting Ben off the juice. It was just absurd. I just thought it was really amateur writing. So that was a huge miss for me.
My miss is the wrap up with Ethan. I just feel like we got cheated out of something that could have continued on. I thought Ethan was a fascinating foil to Brian. I thought he was, for the most part, really good for Justin. And I thought they played off of each other really well. I thought they had smoking hot chemistry. That to end his storyline with a simple, you cheated, we're done, the end. Like,
yeah, we didn't even see him like leave so much. We never saw Justin like go back and get his things.
Yeah, we didn't see. I don't feel like I got closure. I don't feel like I got closure on something that I then started to feel invested on.
You know, we felt the same way. Well, you felt the same way about Dr. David Cameron.
Exactly. All the drama happened off screen. We were just told it. We were never shown it.
Right. So this has been episode 7 of season 3, Stop Hurting Us.
Next time, Justin decides to win Brian back and begins by interning at his agency.
Ted is unhappy with Emmett being the breadwinner.
Michael and Ben try to help a young hustler. It's Hunter enters the story.
That will be episode 8 of season 3, and it's called Hunter for Love.
We're on Twitter at StillQueerAF, as well as Instagram. And you can also like us on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk.
Find me on Instagram at Patrick Randall with no E's.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MatthewPD.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed your time with us, please subscribe so that we can keep making these shows for you and more people can find our show. So until next time, I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me. Still Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.
Still Queer as Folk.